Castle Rock Radio, the future of radio.
Welcome to Food Integrity Now on Castle Rock Radio. This show today will change the way you think about food. Our guest today is Jeffrey Smith. Jeffrey, you have so many accolades, I don't know where to begin. So you are the author of two great books, Seeds of Deception and Genetic Roulette. And you are also the director of the Institute of Responsible Technology and somebody that I consider to be the leading expert on GMOs. Welcome, Jeffrey.
Thank you. Great. Thank you very much. Great to be here.
Yeah. Well, let's just get started. Where are we with the GMOs?
Well, it's a fiercely pitched battle all over the world. It was propelled into our food plates because of lies. It persists because of lies, and by the truth, it will set us free. It's an amazing journey into corporate deception, political collusion, scientific lack of integrity, but we are actually making headway. People more and more are realizing that genetically modified foods are dangerous, just as warned by the FDA scientists back in 1991 and 92. And now doctors are prescribing non-GMO diets to patients. Medical organizations are coming out against it. Food companies are putting non-GMO labels by the thousands on product. So we actually are seeing a real upsurge of consumer awareness and concern, which actually was predicted last year by Supermarket News and Industry Trade Journal. And they actually blamed our non-GMO shopping guide as one of the main reasons.
Oh, wow.
So you have mentioned something called a tipping point that you've seen happen in Europe. How close are we to that here?
You know, it really depends on funding and resources to deploy. We have a situation where it could happen very, very quickly. You mentioned Europe. Let me explain how quickly it happened there. There was a high-profile GMO food safety scandal that erupted on February 16th, 1999. That's when a gag order was lifted off of a top scientist, Dr. Arpad Pusztai. He had been working on a UK government grant to determine how to test for the safety of GMOs and completely accidentally discovered that GMOs were dangerous and that his rats in 10 days had all sorts of problems with every system and organ that he evaluated. 36 different data points were different, and he was fired from his job after 35 years and silenced with threats of a lawsuit. But when his gag order was lifted, there was a media firestorm, and 750 articles were written in Europe within a single month. Within 10 weeks, the tipping point of consumer rejection was achieved, and within a week after that, virtually every major food company committed to stop using GM ingredients. So that was a 10-week high-profile tipping point. In the United States, we've seen a lower profile tipping point with bovine growth hormone. It never got the high profile headlines of cancer in every drop that was going through South Africa after I visited there. But indeed, the milk has a cancer-promoting hormone in higher levels. It's been linked to cancer. It's been condemned by the American Public Health Association, the American Nurses Association, and it's being drummed out of U.S. dairies, kicked out of Walmart, Starbucks, Yoplait, Danone. And so we think in terms of the non-GMO tipping point that's happening in the United States now, for all GM ingredients, it partly depends on how high a profile we can get and how much integration we can get into the channeled media for the most receptive groups, which is health-conscious shoppers, parents of young kids, religious and spiritual organizations, healthcare practitioners and their patients. There's a lot of receptivity in these groups.
You know, Jeffrey, let's back up a little bit because some of our listeners may not even be clear what GMOs are and why they should care about this.
Great. A genetically modified organism, GMO, in this case, plants that have had genes from foreign species, like bacteria or viruses, forced into their DNA. And the two main reasons they have that done is either to produce poison drinkers or poison producers. The poison drinkers are able to not die when sprayed with a poisonous herbicide, so it's easier to weed the field. You just spray over the top of the plants. And the poison producers actually are registered as pesticides. They kill insects. So if an insect bites a poison-producing corn or cotton plant, it splits open the insect's digestive system and kills them. So there's no consumer benefits. Now, the process of inserting the gene into the crop creates massive collateral damage. They could cause higher levels of existing allergens or toxins, new allergens or toxins. They could change the nutrient value of the crop. And these changes are not evaluated before the crops go on the market. In fact, the FDA doesn't require a single safety study on GMOs because their policy in 1992 said they weren't aware of information showing that was significantly different. But that was a lie. It turns out that the person in charge of policy was Monsanto's former attorney, later Monsanto's vice president, and is now the U.S. Food Safety Czar. Monsanto, of course, is the large company that makes most of the biotech plants, and documents made public from a lawsuit showed that, unlike what the policy claimed, the overwhelming consensus among the scientists at the FDA were that GMOs could create these type of diseases and problems. They had urged their superiors to require studies, but their warnings were unheeded.
What do you think of the recent statements released by the USDA in regards to the superweeds issue, stating that they and the Obama administration will continue to support biotechnology?
Well, unfortunately, it's been the Obama administration, the Bush administration, the Clinton administration. Every administration since they were introduced has had a uncompromising support of GMOs. And this was revealed, the way it worked, by Dan Glickman, who was the Secretary of Agriculture under Clinton. Before he stepped down, he admitted in an interview, he said, "What I saw generically from the probiotic side was the attitude that the technology was good and that it was almost immoral to say that it wasn't good because it was going to solve the problems of the human race and feed the hungry and clothe the naked." He said, "If you were against it, you're Luddites, you're stupid." He said, "You felt like you're almost disloyal or an alien by trying to present an open-minded view." He said that attitude was written into his speeches, and when he diverted from that speech and actually ad-libbed about his concerns, he said he was slapped around by the people in the Clinton administration as well as from industry. So this is the attitude that has been propagated by a very, very expensive lobbying campaign, as well as placing people from the biotech industry into key positions in the government. And it's also happened even in the Obama administration more than in the previous Bush administration.
What I find interesting about the Obama administration is how many people he has supported straight from the genetic modification industry. And while his first lady, on the other hand, has an organic garden.
Yes, in fact, the USDA has an organic garden also on its property. But the Secretary of Agriculture, Tom Vilsack, was the Iowa governor, and he was the Biotech Governor of the Year in 2001. He had bestowed an award on Monsanto in 2000. And he continues to dodge the question about GMOs, saying, he has this very homey way of saying it. He says, "Well, you're kind of asking me which son I like better. Which son do I love better? I've got two sons and I want to support them both." And it's sort of like, it's kind of like a shield saying, you know, don't challenge my support of biotech because it's like challenging my love for my son. But in reality, if you introduce genetic engineering, you can destroy all of the other types of agriculture because it cross-pollinates, contaminates, and threatens non-GMO and organic agriculture.
They actually had a biotech governor of the year. I'm still just blown away by that statement.
And he was the one. I was actually at a conference where he spoke, and it was a group of experts on feeding the world. And just the night before he spoke, the co-chairman of the most comprehensive evaluation of agriculture in history gave his report, and everyone knew the conclusion already that the current generation of genetically modified crops has nothing to offer feeding the world or eradicating poverty. And this was a report that had more than 400 scientists, more than 60 signing countries, UN, FAO, UNESCO, all these different groups were supporting it. And it made clear that this concept that GMOs would feed the world was completely a myth. And yet, when I asked Secretary Vilsack about GMOs, and I mentioned to him that the American Academy of Environmental Medicine condemned GMOs, suggesting that all doctors prescribe non-GMO diets to all patients, I said to him that a most recent report showed that there was no actual increase in yield, but an average decrease in yield from GMOs, and that maybe it's time to put it back in the laboratory where it belongs. I got this huge applause from the audience, so we should have known the experience and the attitude of the audience, but halfway into his remarks, he started re-dusting off that old feed the world thing and said, you know, I've been told that people are concerned about feeding the world, at which point the very cordial and supportive academic audience actually started to boo and hiss.
Wow.
And so he backed up and said, well, I'm just telling you what people have told me. And he certainly did.
So President Obama nominated Vilsack in 2008, when he was still a president-elect. Then he went on to appoint Michael Taylor, Roger Beachy, Rajiv Shah, Islam Siddiqui. Who do you think is telling him to appoint these people?
I don't know. You know, my feeling is this. I was hopeful, as many of us were, that he would actually have a big change with respect to GMOs. He actually promised us in Iowa, where I'm from, when he was campaigning, they would require mandatory labeling of GMOs if he were elected. That hasn't happened. And it's just become more of the same. Now, a lot of money, of course, has gone into lobbying, and a lot of money goes into elections. But I don't know who's in charge there. What I do know is that I don't look to Washington to solve the problem. And I think that, as we said earlier in the show, a tipping point of consumer rejection should be all we need. And I think only 5% of U.S. shoppers avoiding GM brands should be sufficient to create the non-GMO tidal wave to knock it out of the entire food supply.
Wow, that would be amazing.
Yeah, and we're on the way to do that. In fact, we're circulating information about the health dangers. We're circulating information about how to avoid GMOs. You can go to non-GMOshoppingguide.com or get an iPhone application, Shop No GMO. It's all free.
Yeah, we're going to let all our listeners know this important information that you're giving out right now. But right now we need to go to a break to pay attention to our sponsors. You are listening to Food Integrity Now on Castle Rock Radio with our guest, Jeffrey Smith. We'll be right back. I'm Carol Gervais, and I'm a certified life coach and one of the hosts of the Food Integrity Now show right here on Castle Rock Radio. Have you ever dreamed of swimming with the wild and free dolphins? I'm not talking about the ones in captivity like the ones at Dolphin Quest. I'm talking about swimming with them in the wild. If this is something you've only dreamt about doing, I invite you to mark this off your bucket list now and join me for an all-inclusive trip to swim with the wild dolphins. Your trip to paradise will include organic gourmet meals, ocean waterfront accommodations, Lomi Lomi massage, and much more. What are you waiting for? Now is the time to make your dream a reality. For more information, go to wilddolphinswimadventures.com or contact me at carol@coachwithcarol.com or 719-687-7447. Once again, that's 719-687-7447. Mahalo.
Hi, I'm Karen Cantrell. I'm an animal whisperer. I have the ability to connect with the energy of your animals. During our session, you will gain a valuable understanding of what the animal is experiencing and why, the ways that you can assist them, and also discover the information and support your animals desire to share with you to assist you on your own healing path. For more information, visit my website, healinganimalwhisperer.com. or give me a call at 303-974-1978.
Welcome back to Food Integrity Now on Castle Rock Radio. Before we resume our interview with Jeffrey Smith, we have a giveaway from Maximilian's Restaurant, one of our sponsors in Woodland Park. And we will take a caller during the third segment of the show. And that number is 888-321-7234. Welcome back, Jeffrey.
Thank you.
So you were talking about the non-GMO shopping guide and the tipping point.
Yes, in fact, I think it's important for the listeners to understand just how dangerous GMOs are, because asking people to change their diet is a considerable request. But as you said at the top of the hour, there is now sufficient information to do just that. And let me talk to those now who are of childbearing age and tell you some of the results that have occurred in the animal feeding studies with GMOs. And there hasn't been a lot of them, but virtually everyone that looked at it properly found serious problems. When hamsters were fed genetically modified soybeans over 2 years, by the third generation, most had lost the ability to have babies. They also grew at a slower pace and died at 4 to 5 times the rate as babies compared to those babies that were born of those fed non-GM soy. Many of them also had hair growing in their mouths. When mother rats were fed genetically modified soy, more than half of their babies died within 3 weeks, also a fivefold increase in infant mortality over those who'd been fed non-GM soy. The babies were also smaller and could not reproduce. Male rats fed GM soy had their testicles change from pink to blue. Mice fed GM soy had changes in their testicles, including damage to the young sperm cells. Female rats had changes in their ovaries and uterus and sex cycle. Mice fed genetically modified corn had smaller babies and smaller litters. And also the offspring of mice fed genetically modified soy, at the embryo stage, the DNA functioned differently. Now, these are pretty serious problems. Now, we don't know exactly what the cause was, whether it was the gene that was inserted into the crop or the massive collateral damage that changed something in the plant, or even the Roundup herbicide, which is sprayed on the Roundup-ready crops. The Roundup herbicide is known to have endocrine-disrupting properties. It's linked to birth defects. It's linked to spontaneous abortions. It's linked to endocrine disruption for both male and female hormones. And it's in higher concentrations in the genetically modified soybeans and also in the Roundup-ready corn that was used in these studies. Now, in India, they feed genetically modified cottonseed cakes to buffalo, and this does not have Roundup herbicide, and yet most of the buffalo, according to this one investigation, suffer from reproductive problems when they eat this genetically modified cottonseed, including abortions and sterility and premature deliveries, prolapsed uterus, etc. There's also skin problems and deaths both among the adults and the calves. In fact, thousands of sheep died when they grazed on genetically modified cotton plants, but not on the non-GM cotton plants. This is after harvest. I visited one little area where they did a study with 9 sheep. Three of them had been feeding exclusively on the GM Bolgard 1 cotton, one group was Bolgard 2, and then there was a third group on non-genetically modified cotton. All 6 sheep eating the GM cotton died within a month. That same day I visited villagers in India who had allowed their buffalo to graze on cotton plants after harvest for 8 years. But when they allowed them to graze on genetically modified cotton plants for 1 day, all 13 of their buffalo died within 3 days. So Wow. There's some pretty serious problems there, reproductive problems, toxic problems, and this is the food we eat that does not require a single safety study by the FDA.
Jeffrey, I think we have a caller on the line who has a question for you.
Okay.
Are you there?
Yeah, I am. This is Jane in Denver, and Well, first of all, on the definition of GMOs, just how it's distinguished from a hybrid, I understand that it's something that it's a not part of the species, but I've been asked that question myself, and I wasn't 100% sure. And then also, are we currently eating animals that are genetically modified, and with what type of genetic modification in the animals?
Very good. So we've got two questions. We've got the GMO versus hybrid and also GM animals. In terms of the hybrid, it's very different. A hybrid is where you cross plants from within the same species, even if they're slightly dissimilar, wide crosses. But in genetic engineering, you take a gene from, let's say, soil bacteria, which produces a toxin called BT, Bacillus thuringiensis. It's actually used even in organic agriculture as a spray. But you take the gene that produces that toxin, and you make millions of copies of it in a laboratory, and you typically put it into a gun, a gene gun, and blast that millions of genes into a plate of millions of cells, hoping that some of the genes end up making their way into the DNA of some of those cells. Then you clone those cells into a plant, and now every single cell of those plants has a little spray bottle sort of in every cell that produces this BT toxin that can kill insects. So it's a lot of things, but it's not sexual reproduction. It's not natural. You're putting genes in there that would never naturally be in that species. You're creating mutations that are pretty extensive, that aren't the results of normal crossbreeding. And so it's quite a very different phenomenon. Now, we're not eating genetically modified animals at present. The FDA wants to change that by approving genetically modified salmon, which has a lot of dangers, which we can talk about in a moment. But the animals that we do eat and the products that we eat from those animals may be influenced by the fact that the animals eat large quantities of genetically modified soybeans and corn, and also sometimes cottonseed cakes and canola stubble. And so what we have here is a situation where the animals that are fed GMOs in laboratory studies have had enlarged organs, shrunken organs, organ lesions, damaged intestines, potentially precancerous cell growth, damaged immune system, all sorts of changes showing that the animals are, in fact, influenced by GMOs. And I've talked to some people like veterinarians who do autopsies of animals that are fed GM versus not, and they see real differences. One said that told me that it looked like a bomb went off in the liver of the animal that was fed GM. And one farmer I know who butchers his own product said his wife won't allow her kids to eat anything from an animal that's been fed GMOs because there's a complete difference. He said you open up in the animal that's been fed GMOs and it just absolutely stinks and there's discoloration, completely different than the white and fresh innards that he sees in the animals fed non-GM. So I've never done that, but he's describing it in absolutely concrete and livid, you know, just horrible terms. And so he doesn't touch it because he's actually seen the insides. So I think that we do want to avoid animals when we can who have been feeding on GMOs, and we want to avoid milk from cows that have been injected with bovine growth hormone, a genetically engineered drug originally introduced by Monsanto, now sold by Eli Lilly. The milk itself has higher levels of pus, antibiotics, and growth hormone, and most importantly, higher levels of a cancer-promoting hormone called IGF-1. So that's, as I mentioned earlier, on its way out of the dairies in the United States, and I really recommend for people not to buy milk products from companies that still use bovine growth hormone.
Does that answer your question, Jane?
Yeah, it really does.
Thanks. Great. Do we have another caller on the line? No, that was it. Okay.
Jeffrey, what's going on with the GMO salmon? Where are we standing with that right now?
Well, let me give a background as to what it is and why they've genetically engineered it. It's an Atlantic salmon that has a gene from a coho salmon that produces a growth hormone. And that hormone gene is turned on by a promoter which comes from another fish, an Arctic pout. And so this gene combination was inserted into the Atlantic salmon so that instead of having a period of time each year where their growth hormone shuts down, it's actually there all the time forcing this animal to grow at sometimes five times the rate of a normal fish, ultimately reaching market size in about half the time. And so it has great economic potential because you can feed the salmon for 18 months instead of 3 years, but it has tremendous potential for harm, both for human health and the environment. The company did really poor research in evaluating the salmon, and some of it was thrown back by the FDA. And then they allowed their advisory committee, which they stacked with pro-GM people, to review it in hopes that they could fast-track it. But even they, who had been handpicked to promote GM, actually sent it back saying there was not enough information to accurately evaluate its health or environmental impacts. What they did find is that it's very likely that it has more growth hormone, it has more of the IGF-1, which is a cancer-promoting hormone that's also found in the milk. It does increase the allergic reaction rates among those who were already predisposed to salmon allergies. It probably will be doused with more antibiotics, which is obviously has implications for antibiotic-resistant diseases. And probably the worst-sounding thing about this is that if these salmon escape into the wild, they can wreak havoc in the ocean. There was another salmon that was genetically engineered also with...
Jeffrey, we're going to have to stop you just for a moment. We are going to take a break, and we'll continue this conversation about genetically engineered salmon. You are listening to Food Integrity Now on Castle Rock Radio. We will be right back.
Seeking understanding and assistance in healing your depression and anger or lack of passion? Hi, my name is Tammy Urbanik at Empowerment Through Healing, and I'm a medium clairvoyant who can work with your spirit guides to assist you. Your spirit guides can offer solutions and understanding at current life issues that you're facing. Visit www.empowermentthroughhealing.com for more information, and you can call me at 719-641-2017.
Experiencing anxiety, anger, depression, or low self-esteem? Do you beat yourself up or sabotage what you truly want to achieve? Hi, this is Jeannie Smith, and at Open Heart Healing, I combine counseling, gestalt therapy, and Tai Chi energy work to assist those who truly desire to bring quality and joy back into their lives. My office is located on South Perry Street here in Castle Rock. Call me for a free consultation at 303-660-6373. Again, that's 303-660-6373, or visit me at openhearthealing.com.
Hi, everyone. This is Carol again, and I just wanted to talk to you about one of our new sponsors, Hole in the Wall Herb and Vitamin Shop up in Woodland Park. The owners, Mark and Nancy Duvall, are not only close personal friends, but they're also my nutritional gurus. They are now selling, teaching, and doing Acira bioenergetic testing on their clients. I had this done, and I found out all my food allergies, emotional stressors, environmental sensitivities, hormonal balance, and I received a customized homeopathic remedy. Please call them for more information at 1-800-437-3240.
Hi, folks. My name is Guy Harold, and my family has been in the surgical stainless steel cookware business for 63 years. I am a value dealer. I sell for less. The cookware is used by Gearson and Price Pottinger, people around the world. Why? Our steel is non-reactive, non-porous, and is correct for your cooking needs. The temperature gauge knob tells you when the texture of produce and minimizes plant cell breakage, saving up to 48.9% more nutritional food value. The cookware has a lifetime warranty. No aluminum, no coatings, no cast iron, no ceramic, and no glass. Nothing to break or wear out. And you can stack cook up to 3 tiers high, saving you energy as well as food value. Call the Cookware Guy at 760-505-7057 or visit our website at www.stainlesscookware4u.com. That's stainlesscookware4u.com.
Welcome back to Food Integrity Now. We're talking with Jeffrey Smith about the dangers of genetically modified organisms. And Jeffrey was just explaining why genetically engineered salmon is such a problem and the dangers of that. And you were just about to explain why that could affect the fish worldwide.
Yes, the Canadian scientists that actually genetically engineered a different salmon, where they also used growth hormone, they did a test, and they allowed the salmon into tanks with enough food that they wanted to eat freely, and there was no problem. When they reduced the amount of food, the frankenfish freaked and started killing and eating their competitors, whether they were other frankenfish or natural salmon. This caused population extinctions and population crashes in these various tanks. Apparently, these are very hungry fish because they're growing so quickly, and if they don't get enough food, they turn very aggressive. And their behavior is quite different. They'll go into areas in the tank that the other fish won't go to. They are a threat to other species of fish as well. So if they got released into the ocean accidentally, which we expect to happen if these frankenfish are approved, then they might actually cause an extinction of normal salmon, or you might end up with these freaky, ravenous, mutant creatures roaming the ocean floor and fighting and killing and eating its out-competing its competitors. So it's a very, very dangerous scenario, and it's something that we really should put a stop to immediately. I mean, we're just basically at the infant stages of understanding the DNA in the first place, and yet we're feeding the products of this infant science to the whole population and releasing these products into the environment where we have no technology to fully clean it up.
So are there any studies done yet? I mean, it's really early about how genetically engineered salmon reacts when consumed, or how it affects humans or animals.
Well, there's no human feeding trials for GE salmon, and there's none for any of the genetically modified crops either. There's actually been one human feeding study that's been published. It was a single meal. And what they found was, even before the meal was administered, the people in the study, three of the seven from the UK, where they don't eat a lot of genetically modified soy, nonetheless, from a previous meal, the gene that was inserted into the soybeans that make the soybeans Roundup ready transferred into the DNA of the bacteria living inside their intestines and continued to function. So these folks had Roundup ready gut bacteria. That means long after we stop eating GMOs, we may still have these genetically modified proteins continually produced from within our own digestive system. Now, we know that corn, a lot of it comes from BT corn, which is corn that produces an insecticide. What if that gene that produces the insecticide were to transfer to our gut bacteria and continue to function? It might turn our intestinal flora into living pesticide factories. So it's a horrible thought, and it's just another one of the studies that should have been done long before these crops were put onto the market.
Jeffrey, what about labeling?
Well, the FDA is mandated to promote the biotechnology industry and has had that mandate for decades. In fact, it's explicit. It's in their PowerPoint presentations. It's the way they function. And so they ignore the desires of 95% of Americans in order to support the economic interests of five GMO companies. And they do that by not labeling their products. In fact, they've even tried to interfere in the past with companies that label their products as non-GMO.
Well,
Go ahead.
No,
well, we're now seeing an upsurge of companies labeling their products as non-GMO, and specifically enrolling it into a third-party verified system that backs up those non-GMO claims. It's called the Non-GMO Project, and now thousands of products are enrolled, and it's sort of like the new organic seal, but in terms of non-GMO claims.
Are there actually seals on food yet with those labels?
Yes, there are. You'll see them, and you'll see them on some foods already. In fact, this month is non-GMO month,
right?
And there's more than 600 stores and manufacturers promoting non-GMO eating and also highlighting the non-GMO seal. So you'll see shelf talkers shouting out to the shoppers, pointing to the brands that have been verified, and some of those have already changed their label with the new seal.
Are they on the website, the non-GMO project website?
Yes.
Okay.
On the project website, you'll see, and also on our non-GMO shopping guide, we now require products to be enrolled in the non-GMO project in order to be in our shopping guide. So you can go there. I think it's laid out a little easier in the non-GMO shopping guide.
And can you give our listeners that website real quickly?
Sure. Non-GMO shopping guide, non-GMOshoppingguide.com.
Okay, great. I understand we have a caller on the line. Do you have a question?
Hi, this is Sharon from Fraser. Yes, I wanted to ask about, a lot of people keep saying to me, it can't, if it's labeled, like you're talking about labeling, if it's labeled organic, it is not, it is then, it's not a GMO, but I understand that that's totally false. It can be labeled organic and still be a GMO.
Well, Sharon, it's not totally false. Here's the situation. Organic standards do not allow the intentional use of genetically modified organisms. And so you're not allowed to intentionally buy genetically modified soybeans or soy lecithin, et cetera, and put it into your product. What they don't require is testing. So if you are an organic farmer and you sell to a buyer that does not test, you may never have that product tested in its whole life cycle, from seed to finished product. So there might be some small level of contamination that has crept in. And so what the non-GMO project does is it provides another level of security where if there are at-risk ingredients like soy or corn, then that product must be tested, and that there are specific exclusions where if it's above a certain very small threshold, then it violates that standard and attention has to be put on fixing it. And so you will actually see organic products that also have the non-GMO project seal. So it's a double level of security. But if you don't see the non-GMO project seal, then you do know that if something is organic, it has actually taken precautions to avoid GMOs, and if there is contamination, it's probably only tiny at this point, and the non-GMO project is going to try and keep that tiny and make it even smaller.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much.
Okay, do we have another caller on the line, or is that okay, Jeffrey? So that non-GMO project is really, it's like it really can safeguard.
Absolutely.
Yeah, which is
absolutely
wonderful. And again, people can get that on the non-GMOproject.com, which is
non-GMOproject.org.
.org. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
.org.
That's okay.
Great.
Now, I wanted to also add one thing that, some people say, well, is it really worth avoiding GMOs because I've been eating them for years and people have been eating them in the United States for years and nothing's happened? Well, when GMOs were introduced in 1996, the people with three or more chronic illnesses in the United States was only at about 7%. 9 years later, it was at 13%. Food allergies skyrocketed by 50% in UK after GM soy was introduced. Reproductive problems, gastrointestinal problems, autism, all these problems are on the rise since GMOs were introduced, but there's no post-marketing surveillance. So we don't know if the GMOs are causing these problems, especially if it takes a while to manifest, or if it accelerates certain symptoms which are out there anyway. One very, very important lesson that we learned in the 1980s was from a genetically engineered food supplement called L-tryptophan, which ended up killing about 100 Americans and causing 5,000 to 10,000 to fall sick or become permanently disabled. The symptoms were shouting to be discovered because it was new symptoms, they were acute, and they came on quickly, and it still took 4 years to discover, and it was almost missed. So we don't know if the GM crops on the market are contributing to problems that aren't necessarily acute and fast-acting and new. They might be simply accelerating the rate or contributing to the rate of cancer and other things that we're already seeing in the population.
And from the animal studies, it seems that the heaviest consequences come to the next generation.
With the reproductive issues, that is the case, where they fed the hamsters genetically modified soy, and the first generation, they didn't see anything. In the second, they noticed some slower growth, and by the third, there was hair growing in the mouths of many of them, and most of them were sterile. And so it really does not bode well for the future of Americans if they've been eating large amounts of genetically modified crops, if these same problems occur in us.
Mm-hmm. It seems to me that most of that our issues with GMOs will be solved based on market demand if they were labeled. What do you think it will take for them to get labeled in the U.S.?
Well, I think it's actually going to be a tipping point which then creates the labeling. See, right now, if you try and introduce labeling in Congress, you've got the biotech lobby, which is very strong, and you've got the grocery lobby, which is very strong, and also the primary farmer organizations, which are basically fronts for the biotech industry because that's where they get their money. So it's a pretty strong lobby against the 95% of Americans who want GMOs labeled. But if there's a tipping point, and we have, say, 5% of U.S. shoppers avoiding GM ingredients, which turns it into a marketing liability, and it gets kicked out of Kraft and Nestle's and other companies that have already removed GMOs from their European products and their Japanese products, then I don't think we're going to see the grocery lobby push against labeling, because the main players will have already eliminated GMOs. And I think when you have that many people avoiding GMOs and you've kicked it out of the food supply, then I think that'll put the Congress people on alert that, in fact, it isn't popular in the United States, people are against it, and it'll be more popular for them to require labeling. So I think we're going to see labeling in the United States, but it may come after the popular uprising against GMOs. And I also think you're right that if labeling were there, we would eliminate GMOs instantly, because 53% of Americans say they would avoid GMOs if labeled, so no one wants to put the skull and crossbones of contains GMO on their product packaging. So all the companies would get rid of it before the packaging requirements kicked in.
Right. We are going to take a break, and we want to congratulate Sharon Farrell, who called during this last segment, and she is the winner of the $25 Maximillion's gift certificate. You are listening to Food Integrity Now on Castle Rock Radio with our special guest, Jeffrey Smith. We'll be right back.
If you are looking for some flavorful, healthy, fresh food, come out to Maximillion's Cafe in Woodland Park, Colorado, focusing on local, fresh ingredients with a changing seasonal menu. Located at 209 East Midland Avenue, Woodland Park, Colorado, right off Highway 24 in downtown. Our walls are full of local artist artwork, and on Friday and Saturday nights, we feature local singers, songwriters, and performers to entertain you while you relax and enjoy a fun environment, a glass of wine, and fantastic food. Open 7 days a week from 11 to 9 p.m., 11 to 8 p.m. on Sunday and Monday.
I'm Carol Gervais, and I'm a certified life coach and one of the hosts of the Food Integrity Now show right here on Castle Rock Radio. Have you ever dreamed of swimming with the wild and free dolphins? I'm not talking about the ones in captivity like the ones at Dolphin Quest. I'm talking about swimming with them in the wild. If this is something you've only dreamt about doing, I invite you to mark this off your bucket list now and join me for an all-inclusive trip to swim with the wild dolphins. Your trip to paradise will include organic gourmet meals, ocean waterfront accommodations, Lomi Lomi massage, and much more. What are you waiting for? Now is the time to make your dream a reality. For more information, go to wilddolphinswimadventures.com or contact me at carol@coachwithcarol.com or 719-687-7447. Once again, that's 719-687-7447. Mahalo.
Welcome back to Food Integrity Now on Castle Rock Radio. We are talking with Jeffrey Smith in our last segment today. Jeffrey, let's talk about superweeds. We saw Monsanto's stock drop 44% over the past year due to the failure of their SmartStax corn and probably some other reasons too, with investors losing confidence in the stock. And what do you think they're going to do about the superweed dilemma? It's they're either going to have to go ahead.
Right now, they're paying farmers to buy competitors' weed killers to add to the mix and apply to their crops because the Roundup was used in such high concentrations in the United States that the weeds have developed resistance to it and has actually left certain farmland completely unusable. There's been many acres that have been completely abandoned, particularly because the pigweed, which is like the weed from hell, it can grow as wide as a baseball bat, 10 feet high, and have 400,000 seeds, and destroy harvesting equipment. It's particularly in the cotton areas. So Monsanto is they're scrambling to try and figure out new combinations of silver bullets to try and fix the problem, but they haven't been successful yet, and they don't have a lot of exciting products in their product pipeline, and I think it's going to largely continue to decline in terms of their prospects and their fortunes. And I think what's happening is not just the superweeds, but I think that the Roundup, which is sprayed so much, is actually a major reason for the sudden death syndrome, which has been a scourge in the Midwest for soy this year. Also, it's probably the main contributor to the early death of corn on the stalks, also around the Midwest. It also is promoting fusarium and other disease-promoting fungus in the soil, which can affect not only that particular crop, but future crops planted on the same acreage. And it's completely changing the mineral availability in the soil and the whole plant, the whole biodiversity in the soil, making it a very, very difficult place to farm. And so I think they're going to face liabilities that no company has yet had to deal with when all this comes to bear. So I don't have a lot of confidence in their future looking bright as long as they've had this commitment to GMOs.
In the past, we've seen some shocking rulings by some judges in favor of the biotech companies, but in this past year, we saw a judge ban GMO sugar beets as a result of contamination. That was kind of surprising to me in light of how judges have been ruling in the past. What's going on with the GMO sugar beet situation? Has Monsanto appealed that? What are we going to see with that?
Well, what's happening is that the judge said it's illegal now to sell genetically modified sugar beet seeds, but the USDA has indicated that it's going to try and get around that by registering certain special permissions, because they say if they don't do it, there'll be a 20% reduction in the amount of beet sugar available in the United States. And if the USDA tries to do that, then the people that filed the lawsuit will again file another one to try and stop them. So we don't know what the Obama administration is going to do, but it's obvious that the sugar beet industry and the biotech industry kind of colluded in saying, well, let's not have enough seeds available just in case we lose the ruling, because they knew the ruling was up for a year. In fact, the alfalfa case was very similar. The judge ruled that the alfalfa was also approved illegally and required an environmental impact statement, which was not done. And so the same thing for the sugar beets. Now, we also had a favorable ruling at the appeals court in Ohio that overturned the onerous requirements for labeling of genetically modified bovine growth hormone, where the governor of Ohio had introduced rules that made it illegal for any company to say RBGH-free or RBST-free, and it would have affected every national brand because they all sell in Ohio. But that was overturned by a appeals court, which was very fortunate, and they acknowledged legally the differences in the milk from treated cows, which was a great breakthrough.
Well, we need a few more of those, don't we?
Indeed. I want to add, by the way, I'm going to be in Boulder on November 16th at the Unity Church in the evening for anyone who wants to come by. And for people who want to get more information now, I'd like to recommend that they go to responsibletechnology.org and sign up for our Spilling the Beans free e-newsletter. And we're going to be announcing something very big very soon in the newsletter so people can get involved. In fact, what's going to happen is we're actually going to be creating a Colorado-based non-GMO working group as part of this new announcement, in that week of November, week before Thanksgiving, and then supporting that group, which we're going to found in Boulder to start, support that group with a lot of tools and strategies and materials so that you can create a tipping point in your community, with your healthcare provider, with your parents that have kids in the school, et cetera, et cetera. And it's all the documents and materials are being created, and we're just going to organize our army of non-GMO eaters very soon.
That is so exciting to hear, because one of my next questions was going to be how can we get involved? You know, so many of us want the labeling. What else can we do, Jeffrey? I mean, do you have any suggestions?
Well, you know, it's interesting that it's not just humans, it's animals. It's not that they want labeling. The animals somehow know. So many varieties of animals, when given a choice, avoid the genetically modified feed. Pigs, cows, geese, elk, deer, raccoons, squirrels, mice, rats, and buffalo. So we need to get ourselves up to the level of animals.
Correct.
Now, it's true that labeling would solve it. I personally think, from a strategic standpoint, not to invest... I decided not to invest all of our money and time to try and fight the huge money and influence that Monsanto and others have in Washington now, but to go to where they are the weakest, which is to consumers, especially those in the categories of people who are concerned about the health of themselves and their families. And so I think the way to do it is to support the non-GMO project, ask for, you know, if you see a product that makes a claim that it's non-GMO, contact them and say, could you join the non-GMO project so we know that your claim is backed up by third-party verification. If you decide to switch from a GM product to a non-GM product, contact the company and tell them that you've done so and tell them why. When they start seeing the signs of a non-GMO revolution happening, they will respond. In fact, I'm seeing the signs all the time. Non-GMO is one of the fastest-growing labels in the United States, and what I'm seeing as I crisscross the U.S. for the last 7 years, this past 12 months, we've seen more absolutely avid, informed, and enthusiastic non-GMO eaters than ever before. It's been institutionalized in doctor's offices where they prescribe non-GMO diets to every patient. The American Academy of Environmental Medicine said all doctors should do that, and we're seeing now pockets of groups that are very strong, and we intend to tie them together and make them even stronger in 2011 to kickstart this non-GMO revolution.
Yeah, once it gets as big as the gluten-free crowd, then we've made it.
Yeah. Or trans fats. Alar was kicked out very quickly when there was a high-profile coverage of that. You know, Meryl Streep, a testifier, there was a 60-minute thing, and all of a sudden it was kicked out, and it sort of boosted organic at the same time. We have the capacity to make rapid change in the United States by introducing a new idea and creating the tipping point. So we are engineering a tipping point, and I would not be surprised if this time next year we'll be talking about the success of the work rather than having it talk about it being on the horizon.
Wow, that's so exciting to hear that, you know, that there's just, you know, hope for getting this out of our food and really being able to fight these companies that are just in it for profit.
One thing that people can do immediately, and aside from signing up for the newsletter, and by the way, there's a new rap song on our website by Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, all about GMOs.
We also put that on our website, Food Integrity
Excellent.
Now.
I would suggest going to the resource section and looking at the audio and videos and watching everything you have to know about dangerous genetically modified foods, and send that link to others. Even though it's a long, full-length presentation, what it does is it changes people's diets on the spot, and it gets them excited. I know that I was interviewed in one TV show, and a man was interviewing me. His father was on as well, and he said that he had sent the link to his dad, who he didn't watch it, but he sent it on to his wife. And then the father came in and said, yes. And the next day, I didn't recognize anything in the refrigerator.
That's wonderful.
That's great to hear. Well, I live near Boulder, and I will definitely be at your event on November 16th. We will stay in touch over email and get more info on that. And we'll be sure to do a post on our website about that.
Fantastic.
I just want to thank you for being on the show, Jeffrey. This has been truly a pleasure to have you and to tap into your incredible knowledge about this subject. We want to announce our guest next week is Sally Fallon Morrell. She's the author of Nourishing Traditions, an amazing cookbook that breaks free of the political correctness of what we're supposed to eat and gives amazing knowledge about lost wisdom about how to prepare your food and what really is healthy. So tune in next week. It'll be a great show. This is Matt Spaeth. I'm here with Carol Grevet and Susan Wright. You're listening to Food Integrity Now on Castle Rock Radio. And Carol, you have something to add?
Yeah, I just wanted to let people know again about our website. It's foodintegritynow.org, and we also put all our shows on there. They're archived and write articles, and there's lots of great information on there. So you can go to the website and you can subscribe to it, and you'll get an email when we put a new article or a new show on there. So thank you again. We will be on next week, Wednesday at 2 o'clock with Sally Fallon Merrill. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.